I'm your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at J Church Radio. I hang out on Twitter in all the commercial breaks, so you know what I'm doing. I'm reading all of your stuff at J Church Radio. And when we come back, we're going to continue with our guest, Steve Neal, and his new series, But Something Is There. It's Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM, standing in this weekend. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight is Steve Neal. We're talking about his new series. It's called But Something Is There. All the information that you need on the series and his Indiegogo is right there at Coast to Coast AM. Just click on Steve's name. It'll take you straight there. Steve, the scene that we were talking about earlier with Whitley, that took place in San Francisco, right? How old were you?
The scene was at the end of the film?
No, when you were eight in the bedroom.
Okay, you're talking about my first. I was about 6 years old.
6 years old, and that was San Francisco, right?
That was San Francisco. I was on 47th Avenue, very near the coast. There was Playland used to be there. The Cliff House is still there. It was a nice place to grow up.
If you were six, for the audience, what year are we talking about?
We're talking about 1958, 57, right in there.
Okay.
Yes, I'm that old.
Yeah. You know what's funny?
Still rock and roll.
This is what's funny. I'm going to be 55 in a couple of months. So in 1957, I still wasn't born.
Right.
Yeah, that's messed up. I'm sorry to remind you of that. But
yeah, but you love all the same bands, the same rock and roll as I do. So that's really cool.
Well, you know, see, this is the thing. You know, we're still young at heart, right? It's about the mind. And I get that.
Always.
And I appreciate that. But when I hear somebody, I graduated high school in 1981. And when I hear somebody tell me that they were born in 1991, you know, that kind of freaks me out. And they're 30 years old, right? They're not young. It just puts everything in perspective. Okay, so let's go back to 1957. You're 6 years old, and this experience happens while you're in your bedroom. It's every six-year-old's fear, but this actually happened. So take us through that evening. What happened?
Well, I went to bed, obviously. I used to go to bed quite early when I was that age, because in that era, you know, parents put their kids to sleep when the sun was, especially during summer, the sun's still up, which is just so wrong, but there it was. But what woke me up in the middle of the night, and I have no idea really what time it was, I don't recall, it seemed to me it was about 3 a.m, which is why I put the clock there in the scene, because that was, I don't remember if I had a clock there or not. But I do, I've had so many experiences where things seem to always happen at 3 a.m, which is why I put that there. But I woke up, what woke me up was absolute silence. Now, if you're living in the city, even in the avenues, even late at night, there's cars driving, there's waves, there's foghorns, there's the buoys, bells I could hear. I could hear the seals at the Cliff House. So there was a lot of ambient noise. There was nothing. That's what woke me up. It was just, you could hear a pin drop. It was like a vacuum.
You woke up to silence.
Absolute dead silence.
Right.
And that's, if you've ever really experienced it, it's quite a sensation.
So you get out of bed.
Right. I did get out of bed. Well, actually, no. I woke up. The silence woke me up. And then all of a sudden, these lights came in through my bedroom windows. And they were like searchlights, beams, just looking all around the room. And it was completely silent still. And this made me very curious. I wasn't really frightened by it. I was, hey, who's doing that? So I very slowly got off the bed. And I was afraid of being discovered by whoever was shining the lights in the window. So I stayed close to the wall and trying to remain in the shadows till I got to the windowsill. And I crept up over the windowsill, and I looked up to see where the lights were coming from, and that's when they, as if they had a life of their own, just focused on me. He's there. And I got this feeling, the sensation of, oh, there he is. that startled me. And now I'm getting pretty frightened. And so I look very quickly to see where I can hide to get away from the lights, because just being underneath the windowsill wasn't good enough. I had to be, you know, I'm a little boy. I wanted to crawl under something somewhere and hide and hope they never found me. And that was my desk.
Well, in 1957, helicopters are pretty rare, and I would imagine there was a much...
Whirlybirds was on the air, and, you know, I used to watch that show, and they were, I'm pretty sure it was that year or that brown in that time, and they were really loud.
Really loud, and you didn't hear anything.
Helicopters.
Right, right. So you knew it wasn't that. Were you able to make out where the lights were coming from, what this craft looked like?
There was something dark in the sky. That's all I remember.
Okay, so now you try to hide.
Yeah, I try to hide, and I'm underneath the desk, and I'm thinking they're not going to find me there. I'll be safe. They'll stop. They'll go away, and then I'll go back to bed. But that didn't happen. The lights got in the room. They just somehow were in the room, and now they were shining right at me underneath the desk.
Did you get up the courage to take a peek around the corner to see what was going on?
No, I didn't have to because the lights were shining directly at me. I had nowhere where to hide anymore. I mean, they had found me under the desk.
Who's they?
Well, that's a good question because it was shortly after that I saw a shadow in the lights, and the shadow came forward, and that's when I saw this figure with a big head. And it really, really frightened me. Keep in mind, though, despite all that, I was still very curious. And I felt myself sort of slipping. I started losing control over my body. I didn't feel I could move that well, almost a smothering sensation. But with all that going on, I still wanted to know what was happening, because I had a real interest in science and space and astronomy. I was surrounded by a family that was very involved in science and arts. And so I was really trying to remain this little scientist and try to observe everything that I could, but I ended up blacking out.
Now, you're 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Was the bedroom window closed?
No, the blinds were up.
Was the window closed?
Yes, windows were closed.
You're 6 years old. Are you wondering how these beings got inside of your room?
Well, yeah, well, of course I did. But, you know, I was so consumed with the event that I really didn't think much about that. I just thought about my safety. I thought, you know, I was frightened. It's just the best way to describe it. I was just frightened, and I didn't know what was going on. And I had nowhere to turn or run or anyone to shout out to, and I couldn't shout it if I tried. The next thing I knew, I was awake in the morning, and I was sleeping at the foot of my parents' bed on a little pillow.
Do you remember what this creature looked like?
I do. I remember it was backlit. It was very, very spindly, and it had a big head.
Clothes? Or was he not clothed?
You know, it wouldn't be till later on that I would actually start to see in more detail what I had been dealing with that night.
Did you?
That's why, as you watched it, it's very shadowy, and you don't get a really good look at it. You do see the large eyes. But actually, on that particular night, I don't recall whether I really don't have a clear memory of whether I saw the eyes or not.
Were you able to stand up? How tall was he compared to you?
No, I couldn't stand up because it's underneath my desk.
Right.
You know how a desk has that area for your knees, and so you can scoot your chair in underneath it when you work on a desk. And I was in that little area there, kind of crammed in there.
Do you remember when you woke up the next day in your parents' room, did you say anything?
No, I didn't. I woke up, I got out of the bedroom, and they were still asleep, and I went back and got in my bed because it was light out. And that's really what I was waiting for. You know, when you're little, you always feel safer when it's light out, you know.
Or in your parents' room.
Yeah, but I had on many, many nights prior to that, had very bad dreams about people coming in my room, and I would go in and sleep with them. I'd go in and crawl in the bed with them, and they wanted me not to do that. And on that particular night, I said, well, I'm just going to go in and sleep at the foot of the bed where they can't see me. I just want to be near them because I'll feel safer.
Did you?
I was an only child, so I mean, I was, you know, really on edge about the whole affair.
Okay, and also spoiled, you know, only child. You kind of get to do what you want to do.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I was a pretty quiet kid, and I pretty much kept to myself.
What did you remember from the night before?
I remembered everything I told you.
Did it ever enter your mind? I know you're six, but did you ever think that maybe this was a dream?
No. I knew I had dreams before. At least I thought they were, but that night, no, I knew, and as I do now, and the way I remember it, I was fully awake. It was real. I was awake. You just know the difference.
Now, in this first episode, I want to jump into this now before we get to the break. We'll pick it up when we come back. You have this first conversation with your grandfather. And he's telling you about his experience as a kid. What was that story? And I don't think I asked you this before. Why was he telling you this story?
The reason he's telling me the story is because we had seen something that night when we were out on one of our walks. That's when we saw the very large orange ball. And then another night, we saw a ghost. There was a man that fell down a well and died in a field that one night I saw the ghost, and I asked him what it was, and he told me the story. So he started to open up to me and tell me things that happened to him in the past.
When that happens, especially with your grandfather or your dad, you know, an adult,
right.
We all do. We believe, you know, these are facts, right? This is part of the knowledge of what you learn as a child, and you use it for the rest of your life. These are facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
absolutely
right. And your grandfather obviously knows the influence that he has on you.
Oh, sure. But I knew he was telling me the truth, despite everything my grandmother would try to tell me.
Right.
She was a skeptic. I mean, she just, you know, she was an atheist. She was skeptical of ghosts or anything like that. It was just nonsense to her.
So you and your grandfather take this walk. You guys are you guys are out,
right?
And you see something in the sky that may be Mars or something that color. What happened?
Well, we would take walks on this dirt frontage road quite often and go out and look at the stars because he knew I loved the stars. And in Marin County at that time, there wasn't a lot of city life there, especially in San Anselmo, where I was staying with them in the 50s and early 60s. So you could see the Milky Way, the stars, beautifully. And that was one of my favorite things to do. I have big telescopes to this day. I'm still an amateur astronomer. But on that night, we saw this orange ball. And it kept getting closer and closer and closer. And as it got close to us, it slowed down and just kind of hovered over those poles with the wires on them, the power lines.
Yeah, power lines.
So, yeah. And it just hovered over that and just stayed there for a bit. And we watched it with great curiosity. And again, it became very, very silent. And then it just sort of moved off and just kind of shot away at a pretty good pace, speed, down the frontage road and disappeared off into the distance.
What did he say it was?
He didn't know. I didn't know. I knew it wasn't a meteor. He was baffled by the whole thing. And he really couldn't give me a straight answer to what he thought it was.
So you guys go home, and what happens next?
Well, we were inside talking about it at the dining room table, and that's when my grandmother comes in, and she listens to what we're saying, and she got pretty, well, she got very sarcastic and started picking on him and told me that eventually he'll have you seeing leprechauns and the banshee and all this sort of thing, because he had told those stories to me too. However, he never used the word leprechaun. He said little people. And there's a big difference between leprechauns and little people.
Not that much.
Now, when I think of leprechauns, I think of Darby O'Gill and the little people.
I do too. And of course that's part of folklore, but
Yeah, it is.
the
And where did
other,
that come from?
right. That's the other thing that we need to always consider when we're talking about fairies or elves or leprechauns or gnomes. Well, that's what they were called 200 years ago, 300 years ago, 400 years ago. Today, we would call them little gray aliens.
That's correct.
The conversation that you had with him, he relayed a story to you about when he was younger. We've got 3 minutes. Yeah, we can get it in.
Okay. I call that grandfather's devil because that's what he described it as. He was bringing his mother home late at night. They were in a carriage being pulled by a horse, and the horse would not go past the churchyard. There was something in the churchyard. It was very dark, and there were trees there, and he could just barely make out that there was somebody or something in there. So he got out to investigate it. And when he did, and he got through the trees and could see this man, this form sitting on the edge of the wall of the church, it looked up at him. But the first thing he noticed was that the feet on this man were hooved.
Whoa.
And the face looked, he described as the devil. It had these dark eyes, and it was wearing a brimmed hat and like a trench coat. Classic sort of Man in Black kind of look, but he had these eyes that he never forgot, and he described it as being the devil to me. It scared him to death. He got in the carriage and went the other way, took another route, and just got out of there.
Now,
But when he
you're very young, and you hear this story. You just saw something outside that you can't explain. You know
Right.
that something just came in your bedroom. Is your life tipping over at this point? Are you freaking out a little
No,
bit?
not really. But I had this great secret because I didn't tell him. I didn't tell my mom. I didn't tell my grandparents. I didn't tell anybody what was going on. I just kept having the experiences and just kept logging away the information or the data that was happening to me. I was very concerned, even at that age, that if I was to tell people what I was experiencing, that they would think I was crazy or maybe send me away somewhere. I didn't know.
I've got to jump in right there. We're going to take a break. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Steve Neal. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Stay with us. Welcome back. Our guest tonight is Steve Neal. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'm standing in all weekend. And tomorrow night, I want to remind you, tomorrow night, Barrett Brown right here on Coast to Coast for the full show. But tonight, it's Steve Neal. First time he has ever been a guest here on Coast to Coast, which doesn't make any sense to me. I'm going to ask Steve about that when we come back. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. It is very simple. Our guest tonight, Steve Neal, and we are talking about his new series, But Something Is There. And Steve, I want to kind of pick up where we left off, which is these experiences that you were having at such a very young age. How often were they happening? I mean, did it just continue weekly, monthly?
It happened sporadically. That's my memory. Probably it was occurring a lot more often than I realized, because later in life, especially during the 90s or even late 80s through the 90s, it could be nightly, certainly weekly. But my memories back then, there's lots of incidences that stick out into my mind. And in fact, one night I was staying in Chico, and I must have been 8 or 9 years old, right around there. My dad took me up there to visit an old racing buddy of his, and spent the night there, and I stayed in his friend's son's room. We were together. I was sleeping on the floor in a sleeping bag, and this really bright light came at the window, and I remember it being orange at one point and being very, very frightened. And I don't recall the details, but I do have a lot of memories like this sporadically through my childhood occurring. There are other times that when I was in grammar school, just towards the tail end of it, right before I was about to go to high school, and I had a friend spending the night, and I was out all of a sudden on the porch in my underpants and a T-shirt. I don't know how I got there, and I was watching a UFO up over the hill over our house. Now, that hill was a Nike base. I knew this because I remember standing in the schoolyard during the day and seeing the Nikes come up out of the ground. If you hiked up there and looked through the fence, it just looked like some sort of farming field. There was nothing there, but there was an underground base there with Nikes that were hidden, and they would come up through the ground. So where I was looking that night from my porch, looking up there, seeing this hat-shaped light very silently moving across the top and then dropping down from this very steep hill, just blew me away. So I ran inside to wake up my friend. I wanted him to see it with me, and I dragged Mike out there. I mean, literally dragged him out there. He wouldn't wake up. He was just barely awake, and he looked at him, oh, yeah, that's great, and he just went back in and went back to sleep. And I watched it, and then it moved over the top of the hill and was gone. And as I came back inside the house, my mother said, what are you doing up at this time of night? It was about 3 in the morning. There you go again.
Right.
And, yeah, and I said, well, I saw a UFO out there. And she says, there's no such thing as UFOs. Go to bed. So the next morning, I'm sitting at the table, and she walks in, you know, as having breakfast before going to school, and she brought in a newspaper and threw it down. And I looked at it, and there it was on the front page of the local newspaper in Pacifica that a UFO had been seen over the Nike base.
And that gives you an opportunity, Steve, right there to go, well, I'm not, you know, see, and you can, you know, you can show an adult, you know, that they are wrong and that you're not crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, she knew that in that one stroke. And I was still being pretty quiet about the other things I was seeing. And I recall at that point, because I'm getting older now, thinking to myself that I'm just having dreams or, you know, something like that. I'm having these extraordinary dreams. But I did feel I had some sort of connection with UFOs because I was seeing them quite often. In fact, after that, Mike and I used to go up on the rooftop at his place of the garage, which had been converted into a gym where we used to work out. And we'd sit up on the garage with binoculars and stay up there as long as we can looking for UFOs. I remember that very clearly.
What would today we've got night vision, which I have, right? Binoculars and all of those things.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think you would have done with that same technology back then? Because I know, you know, you're a high tech guy today.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would have been using it for sure. I never stopped looking at the sky since the time I was a little child. And the first time I was told by my mom, that when I looked up at the stars at night, I said, home.
Right.
I think I talked about that before with you. And so I just, if I was out at night, I was always watching the sky. And I'm used to, you know, people saying, come on, Steve, you know, I'm an amateur astronomer, and I spend all my time looking at the sky. I'm always looking through a telescope, and I've never seen anything. You know, well, they're looking through a telescope all the time, so of course you're not going to, well, you're focused on an object like the Ring Nebula or the Orion Nebula or something like that. You're not aware of all the other things going on in the sky at that time. So
now, as this is going on throughout your life, and I don't want to let too much of it go, but you have so much to discuss that we're going to end up running out of time tonight, and I understand that. But let's jump forward a little bit. We're going to come back, but let's jump forward to you finding Yvonne Smith. Like I said at the beginning of the show tonight, this is before the internet. So if you're going to go out and try to resolve these issues in your life, you've got to put a lot of effort into it. You just don't jump on the internet back then. You've got to go and figure this out on your own. How did you do that?
Well, I forget when it was. I think it was at a newsstand, and I saw a magazine called UFO Magazine. And I bought a copy of it, and I brought it home, and I was very pleased to read through it and see that the editors, the people writing the stories, Don Ecker and Vicky, were taking the subject matter very seriously. And it didn't make me feel like, you know, I was reading some sleazy Inquirer UFO reporting type of publication. And you know what I mean.
Right, right.
It treated the subject with respect, and it assumed that you're an intelligent person and that you were very curious about this subject, and they were going to try to provide you with as much information as possible about it that was legitimate and not spun in any way, shape, or form. And they had a story about Yvonne Smith and about the fact that she was working, doing hypnotherapy, and that she had a support group. And I was very fascinated by it because it was very local to me. I mean, very local.
Here in the valley.
And prior to her, you know, the only other person I knew of at that time was Bud Hopkins, who Whitley had worked with, and he was pretty far away to get in touch with. At this point in time, I had seen so many UFOs and had so many experiences, and of course, the fact that I had read Communion, I knew I was having these experiences, and I very much wanted to find out if I could get any more detail out of my experience by going to Yvonne and working with her and meeting other people that had the same experience. It was very important to me.
So you reached out.
I did.
She responded.
She responded well. I also offered to do illustrations for her. In other words, work with her clients, and as they described what they witnessed or saw, very much like a police artist, I would draw the beings, which were from person to person almost identical in every way, shape, and form.
Did Yvonne vet you?
Did she vet me?
Yes.
I suppose she did. And of course, I had a first meeting with her to see if I was susceptible to hypnosis. Not everyone is.
Right.
And so she took me through the whole procedure and put me under. I didn't even know she was doing it. She was so good at it. And then I recall distinctly my arm floating off the table because she told me that it would become weightless. And it was just the strangest feeling because you knew you weren't doing it. You really honestly felt that your arm lost all its weight and started to float. And that's when they know that you are susceptible to it. But I got to point out that that was the only time she suggested something to me under hypnosis. And at no time during regression about my experiences did she ever suggest, did you see an alien in the room? Did you see a flying saucer? She never used that type of dialogue.
Now, were you aware of your faculties? In other words, you're recalling memories, but you know what's going on, is what I'm saying. You know what's going on around you, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? And so these memories start to come out, and this is what hypnosis is for. But you're also aware of what's going on. Were you surprising yourself as these memories started to reveal themselves?
I don't recall being surprised. Amazed, yes. I mean, maybe that is a form of being surprised, but hypnosis, I was there. It was like I was there. It's the only way to describe it. And it gave me a very, very good look at our visitor friends. And of course, that's what led to all the artwork that I did. I could see them quite clearly.
This is why I personally, I don't want to do it. I wouldn't want to have any regression therapy. I just want whatever is hidden to stay right there. I just don't want to know. Others are quite comfortable with it. They want to know what they can't remember and what they possibly have experienced. I'm the opposite of that. And that's why I'm asking you, were you surprised? What were you feeling at that moment? I think I would lose it.
I'm a very curious person, and I'm fascinated by our universe. I'm fascinated by reality. I'm fascinated by our existence and what it all means. So, if I was to tell you I wasn't emotionally moved and disturbed at times or frightened, I would be lying, because I was. But the end game is the enlightenment and the knowledge of knowing what this experience might possibly mean to us that kept me going back. And the fact that I did have a lot of conscious sightings of craft, of beings, and I really wanted to see how they compared as well. Did this mean that the hypnosis that I was actually experiencing was accurate? Because when someone puts you under hypnosis, they can lead you. They
right.
can very much lead you.
And that's right.
And in doing so, whether it's intentional or not, you will see things because they suggest it to you. But Yvonne was really good at not doing that.
There's one question that I have to ask.
Right.
Which is this. Here we are in 2018, Steve. You had an amazing career here in Hollywood in film, special effects, and makeup, and everything, model making, everything that you were doing. All of that got derailed. Here you are in 2018. You chose to expose these UFO and ET contact and abduction experiences. Would you change anything today?
No, it wouldn't change anything. The only reason that I went silent was because my late wife asked me to stop. And after she passed away in 2013, about a year later, I started to realize I don't have to be quiet about this anymore. Mary's okay with it. My friends are okay with it. And I think it's important as I thought it was important when I originally came forward about it during the 90s.
Which is, and we're going to head towards a break. I want to get this in right. before we get back. Which is one of the reasons why you weren't on Coast to Coast until tonight.
That is one of the reasons. Absolutely is.
And now you're out of the closet. Right?
Yes, I'm out of the closet.
That's it. It's all wheels off from here on
and
out.
The climate is quite different in light of the authorities or government, whatever you want to call them, are admitting and releasing data and documents and video that this has been covered up honestly and truly for years.
Does that surprise you? I mean, it certainly surprises me that the media, for the first time, isn't playing the X-Files music and cracking a joke when they're talking about UFOs.
You know, for some reason, Jimmy, it doesn't surprise me. I just have this feeling that it's supposed to happen this way.
Some of the experiences that are going to be presented here, and you and I have talked about, happened right here in the Valley. It's one of the most populated spots on this planet. There's a lot of people here, and I've seen things here in the Valley that doesn't make it into the news. You have had the same experiences here. How is it possible that you can see something over your house here in the Valley and it doesn't show up on the cover of the LA Times?
Well, it beats the heck out of me. I don't know. But I do know that people just don't pay attention the way you and I do.
Right.
If they see at 3 in the morning an F-16 chasing a disc that's arc welder blue skipping across the sky over the 118 freeway, it doesn't surprise me that people just don't notice it. Or if they do, oh, that was a meteor or something. You know what I mean?
I saw something crashing into downtown Van Nuys at 10 o'clock at night, 10:30 at night.
What year was that?
2009. And I've got to take a break right here. We'll talk about it when we come back. I don't know. Maybe you saw it, too. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Steve Neal. The new series is called But Something Is There. This is Coast to Coast AM.